Hi, this is Fiona, Big Mama's Parrot, and I'm here in a van in the middle of London, in Soho, with
Sam here.
Okay, Sam, could you explain what we're doing in your van?
Sounds worse than it is. I'm parked outside the Blues Bar. I'm about to go and set up for the jam. Ain't nothing but the Blues Bar. And this was a quieter place to do an interview than a pub.
Okay, fair enough. Sam and I actually did this interview first back in July in the south of France. So we're going to try and recreate the south of France at the end of July in London at the end of October.
Not possible.
Probably not. Okay, so where does Soul Junction come from?
You mean the name or the band?
Both, really.
Well, the band, it was... my previous band was called Hucklebuck, and it was very Chicago bluesy sort of harmonica thing, and I was just writing a lot of songs that didn't suit that formula anymore. So I set out to put together a different band to accommodate those more of those songs. And I was looking for an organ player, and I found Joe. And then I was looking for another name, because quickly I stopped using Hucklebuck, because that was very much myself and Giles King, the guy who was playing before. And before I knew it, everyone started referring to it as the Sam Hare Band, which I couldn't stand. And I've always tried to avoid, so it was became apparent pretty quickly that we needed a name. And I can't even remember how I thought of Soul Junction. I think it was my brother, older brother, was in Muscle Shoals, Alabama one day, and he texted me and he said, it's something like, it's like a Soul Junction here, because you've got all these great studios. And I just thought, well, I need a band name today, and that'll do, so.
Okay.
But anyway, it's my brother on bass, Fergus Hare on bass, and Mimi on drums from Hucklebuck as well, and Joe Glossop on the organ. And it's more of a, we play more of a diverse range of stuff. We still play some old school blues stuff, but we also play a lot of my songs and more sort of country and gospel and soul stuff, all intertwined.
So that was a conscious decision, like the evolution from Hucklebuck to Soul Junction was a conscious thing?
Yeah, I got bored of Hucklebuck.
Right.
And I wanted a new, but it's really hot in this time.
And yeah, Sam has been out walking his dog today, and it's steaming in his van.
Yeah. I got bored of Hucklebuck, and instead of just changing members all the time and keeping it the same band, which I never really agree with, I thought I just form a completely new band. Of course, on doing so, once Hucklebuck was over, I get inundated with messages about how great everyone thought Hucklebuck were. But I wasn't that aware of that at the time. I mean, we played a lot of gigs, and some of them were to very few people. So I think it was just one of those things, time for a change, you know.
You're happier with where you are with Soul Junction now, and you did, on your MySpace, you've got the room shot.
Yeah.
Sessions. So how did they come about?
That came about from actually trying to go in and make an album, but for various reasons it just ended up being a shorter session. I wasn't happy with a couple of things, so I changed my mind about being in there for a whole session. So it turned out just an EP. But that was just wanting to put these new songs down with the new band and a slightly different sound, and Matt Schofield had sort of said that he wanted to produce it, and so we found a date that he could do and went down there and did it. But there were a few things I hadn't figured out, so we sort of stopped it, and I'm going to go back and do it again at some point. But we got the few tracks out of it, which I'm really pleased with.
So any plans as to when you're going to go back and finish it, and how would you describe the sound of the Rimshot sessions?
The first of all, the plan is, I doubt it's going to happen this year now, but hopefully early next year I'd like to get it done. And I'd like to go back and get a similar sound. It's a sound that's a sort of combination of all the different music that I listen to and that I want to sound like. It's not just blues. I don't want to sound like Muddy Waters in the 50s or anything like that. I want to incorporate all my influences and everything I've ever heard, which might involve sort of rock and roll, Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and everybody, and a lot of Southern soul influence and country and everything just merging together and being channeled through songs that I've just written.
So how?
I didn't ask the question, did I?
No. Well, you did, kind of, but it's kind of, how do you get all those influences into one sound? Because that's a lot of...
I don't do it deliberately. I just, when I sit down and write a song, it normally just sort of falls out of me. And I think, well, where did I get all that from? You know, like everybody, I'm convinced I've ripped it off from somewhere. And I don't think I have. Occasionally, I'll listen to a song. A few years down the line, I'll hear a song and I'll think, oh, I wonder if I'd heard that close to the time that I'd written it, because I sort of, a melody was similar or something. But I don't consciously do it. I just settle down to write a song and it all filters through. And some of the songs are more bluesy and some of them are more songy.
Okay.
You know, and sometimes I'm aware of... Sometimes when I'm writing a song, I'm trying to write a song with a certain kind of flavour. If I've been listening to a lot of a certain artist or a certain sound. But generally, I just sort of see what happens.
Do you have a plan for writing songs, or is it just whatever way it comes about?
I wish I did have a plan. I find it very hard work because... I can't just sit down and make myself write. I say that, I've been doing that this week. For the first time this week, I've sort of said, right, today I'm going to write music.
And how's that gone?
I've gone up to my loft with a guitar, because there's no computer or dog or phone in my loft.
They're so distracting, aren't they?
Yeah, so I get to the top of the house, where there's no distractions, and I can actually make a noise because there's no adjoining walls, and just try and write a song from scratch. I find it very frustrating. Most of the songs I've written that I think are any good, a certain line or a hook or a melody have occurred to me as I'm driving along or as I'm walking in the park or swimming in the sea or whatever, you know, or in the bath. Random things. Lines will come at me and the song will start to write itself in my head. And then because I'm lazy, I think to myself, okay, well, I'll leave that for now because that's a song. Instead of sitting down with a pad and paper and thinking I'm going to finish this now while it's fresh, I always just assume that I'll do it, that it'll take care of itself, and it doesn't. So a year or two can pass until I sit down with all my writing notes and little melodies on tape and stuff, and I suddenly remember all the stuff that's occurred to me, and that's when I try and collate them all into songs. And I'm going through that stage at the moment, just drawing on old ideas.
So how long would you think it takes you to complete a song? Because for me, I think, is that not just the way a song germinates? That kind of you start and you get ideas and then you go back to it and you need time out to think about it. But if you were to give me a timeline for when you started a song to when you actually completed it, how long do you think that would be?
Some of my songs I've written in 10 minutes from start to finish. Some I've written over the course of 2 or 3 years.
Right. So there is no time.
There is no time.
Okay.
And every whenever I think I've got a good songwriting formula, I can't do it. I can't seem to do it again. So it's different every time.
Okay.
I would love to be able to control that more. I'd love to be able to sit down and say I'm going to write a bunch of songs today.
Do you think anybody has a songwriting formula?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I think someone like Bob Dylan, for example, back in the mid-60s or whatever, or early 60s, used to sit down at a desk and write songs. Sit at a typewriter and write songs.
Okay.
As a conscious, I'm going to work now and just do it. Like you're writing a film script or something. And I wish I could do that, but I don't seem to be able to at the moment.
Okay. So, How autobiographical are your songs?
Some of my songs are very autobiographical. Some of them start autobiographical, or probably all of them start that way. But then they'll go off on a tangent and they'll suddenly become a sort of random story. I've written a lot about... The easiest thing I'd know how to write about is reality. And in the last 10 years or so, I've lost both my parents. So that wasn't something I consciously tried to write about. It was something that I felt that was trying to get out of me. And only now, actually, do I feel I'm at the stage where I feel like I've got a few of those things out of my system through music, and I can actually go on and start writing other songs, because I don't want to just write a bunch of miserable songs for my whole life. But so some of those ones, like on, there's a song called Her Time of Day, which is completely about my mum, and that's all true and autobiographical.
She's become the oceans where she rests, any ocean east or west. This is the time that I love best. This is her time of day. This is her time of day. It's about the time the sea moves in. I sit here with a glass of gin, thinking about what might have been. This is my time of day. This is my time of day. This is my time of day.
Celebration.
Yeah, no, I don't think that one's particularly miserable. I think the melody that I set out to give that a more joyous kind of melody. There's a song about that I wrote about my dad called Fly With Me Again, which I think is a bit more depressing. Melodically depressing.
But it's all I want.
I listen to a lot of music, a lot of quite sad music as well, so it comes through. But I think you can be a bit, it can be a bit indulgent to get caught up in just singing depressing or sad melodies and, you know, melancholy music all the time. And I don't want to gain a reputation for doing that, you know. For, like, I'm not saying comparing myself in any way musically to someone like Coldplay, but they did start their career by having this very, very bleak sound to them. And a lot of people would just think, oh God, I can't listen to this because it's depressing me. And I don't want my music to depress people. I'd love my music to get through to people somehow. But
So do you have a favourite song? And why is it your favourite song?
I like most of my songs, but I'm very fond of Her Time of Day because it sounds exactly how I wanted it to sound when I wrote it. And whenever I'm at the place where I wrote it, this house in Cornwall, I always get it on the brain. You know, I start singing it to myself, like you get other people's music on the brain. So I know that's something telling me that I wrote the song I meant to write, as it were. So I'm very fond of that one, you know.
Yeah. And Moving Through Georgia. Is that about moving through Georgia?
Yeah, that's pretty much true, except I changed a couple of things. Me and my younger brother went on a road trip across the southern states in the late part of 1999. We got hold of a car from somewhere and drove from Georgia to California. And we were mugged the night that we got there.
In Georgia?
And in Georgia. We landed and got this car and driven down to Macon, Georgia, where the Allman Brothers were from and where Little Richard was from. It was a bit of a rock and roll trip for us, and that was our first stop. And we got mugged just... we'd been there for about an hour. So for the next 6 weeks, we did feel like we were slightly on the run. We were scared of going anywhere too back alley, you know. So I wrote this... That song was put together of lyrics I wrote while I was out there, just in my sort of notebook. And the opening line says I was moving through Georgia with a tornado on my tail. So there was no tornado. The tornado's... metaphor for this guy that mugged me. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, I couldn't say, you know, I was moving through Georgia
with a mugger on your
badass mugged us. But apart from that, all the places I list and everything we went to, and you know, there are various hints at what we might have done there or whatever in the song. So that's pretty true.
Well, I was moving through Georgia. Tornado on my tail. Well, I just left Macon with a warm south wind in my sail. When the next stop is Memphis, and I hope my wheels don't fail.
Okay, so I'm just moving this along because Sam has to set up for the jam tonight, which brings me nicely on to the next question. So you don't just have your own band, you do run the jam here on a Monday night in like probably the most popular blues bar in London.
Yeah.
And you also do photography. And can you, does photography influence your music, or is it the other way around, or are they connected, or how does that work?
They've become connected by default because through everyone I know in music, they all slowly gathered that I take pictures. So now most of the work, if not all of the photography work I do, is music-based photography for album. You know, I do a lot for albums by Matt Schofield and Ian Siegel particularly. And I've done stuff for the Spike Drivers and Lee Sankey and people. And all those guys are friends of mine. And we've all played together lots. And so when they've needed an album done, they've just sort of turned to me because I was the nearest. So yeah, they are connected. I wouldn't say they influence one another really, except that I do believe that if you're photographing a gig, the better the gig, the better the shots are going to be. Music, you know, you can really get into the photography side of things if someone's playing this massive solo. I don't think you can take great shots at a mediocre gig. I don't know why that should translate from sound to film, but it does.
Well, I guess if the gig is good, you're enthused. So I guess it follows.
Yeah.
So you mentioned people like Matt Schofield and Ian Siegel, which are people that you play with as well.
Yeah, when I can. Yeah.
And you said a little while ago that you're working on a new album with Ian.
Well, he's got a new album. He's going to record a new album quite soon, and we may be working on some songs together for it. I don't know if anything's going to come of that or not. But we did there has just been an album of his released quietly. It's an album called The Dust. It's been released in Holland and through his website, but I think it's about to get a national release here. And that was a mostly acoustic album that he did, but I wrote a song on that, and then we co-wrote another one. And I sing and play on three or four tracks. So it's quite a good, it's probably the best thing for my career that I've done so far. So I'm keen for people to go out there and buy it and like it, you know.
So is that the only way people can hear it, or is it on Ian's MySpace, or is it on his website?
It's on his record company is New Gene Records, and so it's on. You can buy it through there. But it's about to be released in this country, and I think Mojo Magazine have already said they like it. So I think it's about to be on general release.
Can you just remind us, the name of Ian's album is The Dust, is that right?
The Dust, yeah.
And it's just been released on?
New Gene Records.
Cool. You did Bestival this year.
Yes.
How was that, besides being wet?
Very, very wet. I can't even think of any other words to describe it other than wet.
Really?
It was quite intense because when we got there, and I think three of us had just come back from Sicily to be there. And we got there, and the first thing they said was, you should prepare yourself for the fact you're probably not going to play.
Why?
Because everything had flooded. The stage we were going to play had flooded and was dangerous. So they said, you're probably not going to play. And we thought, great, that's just great. You know, we could have played longer in Sicily. And so, but then they said, well, you've got to wake up for your gig, you know, and get ready for your gig anyway, just in case. So we did, and we were playing quite early. And we got the truck down there with all our stuff, and still not really knowing whether we were going to play or not. And then 10 minutes before we were due to play, they said, "Yeah, you are going to play. We've sorted out the stage." And we were all sort of were all kind of half changed for the gig, but you know, not couldn't really be asked to change trousers or anything like
the
that.
The glamour.
So if you actually, that's on YouTube, and if you look at what we're all wearing a real hodgepodge of so stage clothes mixed with just what we were wearing anyway.
All right.
Joe looks like he's wearing pajamas. Because he's got this sort of his cool stage shirt, but then he was obviously cold, so he's put something normal over the top. And I think Ferg did the same. And I've got sort of, you know, trousers rolled up to my knees and boots
very sexy,
on.
Yeah,
real kind of. But anyway, it was a great gig to have, and it was a great gig to do, and I thought we sounded really good. There weren't billions of people there because it was quite early for a bunch of festival goers.
How early?
It was 10:45.
Oh, good God.
So, you know, for a bunch of stoned people who are probably still wet from the night before, they're not going to go out and see a gig at that time. But
so you're off to Russia next month?
It looks like we're going at the beginning of December, yeah.
So tell us a bit more about that. How did that come about?
Myself and Joe have been there before. It came about from a jammer who used to come down here, a guy called Andre, who is from St. Petersburg. And, you know, a lot of people approach me at this jam particularly and say, hey, do you want to come play in Russia or do you want to come play here or there? And you always go, yeah, sure. But you know that it's never really going to amount to anything. And then he kept on at me and emailed and then came back over and we had a couple of meetings. And so he took me and Joe and a guy called Cliff over there for the London Blues Festival in April last year, I think. And we played to a massive amount of people in a huge venue and got treated very well. And now they've asked us back, I think the whole band are going over to play another London Blues Festival, I guess.
Cool.
I don't know how much of following there is in St. Petersburg, but we went down very well before, so.
All right.
We'll see what happens.
So do you have a favourite gig? We're nearly at the end.
A favourite gig that we do regularly or a favourite
gig
that we have done?
Just a favourite gig that you've done and why?
Best of all was definitely the high point of this current lineup, this band, my songs being played how I want to hear them, without question. That sounded the way I wanted to do them. Without going on about Ian and Matt too much, but I've guested with both of those guys at the 100 Club, and that was a pretty big deal for me at the time. Ian especially, I was a sort of special guest added to the band to sing some songs with him. And, yeah, it went down really well, and it felt like a real lift for me. And just as a guitar player, playing with various people over the years, I got to sit in with Bonnie Bramlett of Delaney and Bonnie fame at Cargo a few years ago. And just as a fan, just because I listened to their music, and, you know, it was a chance to get up and play with someone that I've been listening to for years anyway. And so that was a personal kind of triumph, you know.
Okay. So you've lots of favourite gigs.
Yeah. Yeah, my favourite gig's always the one I'm about to do.
Okay, if you were 99, what would you want to be your fondest memory or most remembered for, if you were looking back?
Well, I won't be 99.
Well, you might be, Sam. Have a think about it.
Okay. If I'm 99, what my fondest memory... I just like... I think I mentioned this in France as well, although I'd forgotten about it. The George Harrison tribute concert. I normally hate tribute concerts, but that one, I loved the way that his friends and colleagues got together and played a gig and played all his songs. And I think the way it came across was just a great tribute to the man. And if I've written enough decent songs by the time I'm 99, if I live to 99,
right,
and if any of my friends and colleagues are still alive as well, and they want to get together and have a gig in my honour and just play a few of my songs and a few songs that I like, then that's all I could really hope for, I think.
Is it you who wants Joe to play organ at your funeral?
Or
is that Joe fantasizing?
I may have mentioned that drunk, loosely, and I probably said it once to him. But my brother has asked me to play at his wedding.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, I think I probably said to him, if you're alive when I die, you might as well go and play some shit-kicking gospel at my funeral. And I think I may have even said to him, get my whoever is left in my family to get him a proper B3 and just take it out of my estate money.
Okay, if you're this, I've got a few more questions and then you can go.
Yeah.
If you were a world leader, could be anybody, fictional or real, who would it be, and where would you want to be leader of?
Do you mean political?
It doesn't matter. Leader? Just a famous. I guess political would be the most obvious, but I guess the most famous, influential person over the last while, whether they're fictional or real, and where would you want to be leader of?
I'd love to have been one of the people responsible for a lot of the music that we listen to today. Someone like Sam Phillips, who ran Sun Studios, who first recorded Elvis Presley and Howlin' Wolf and B.B. King and Jerry Lee Lewis and Johnny Cash and everybody else. You know, he is, in my opinion, one of the leaders of everything we listen to today.
Okay.
So, yeah, maybe I'll say I could be Sam Phillips.
I like the answer. Good leader. But where would he be leading? It has to be a country. I'm going to be unfair.
Well, he's dead now.
I know. But where?
Well, he did lead in Memphis, but that's not a country.
No, it's not. It has to be a country, Sam.
Why? Well, okay, let's say if I'm him living now, and I can lead this country, because I quite like this country.
Fair enough. So Sam.
And I think this country needs a bit more of a kick up the arse, music-wise, as well.
Okay.
But that's a whole other thing.
We can't go into that now, because we don't have time. Okay, last thing. We are piratepods.com, and it's a tradition, which I'm sure you remember from July, that you have to give your best pirate impression.
Oh, God, I do, don't I? That's interesting.
Okay. This is Fiona, Big Mama's Pirate in London with Sam Hare. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Fiona. Are you going to come and jam?
I think I might for a little while.
Let's jam.